Folks, I'm going to get started. It's 12:30. The panel today is called Breaking Down Walls, a Decentralized Social Web, I'm Evan Perdomo, and I've been lucky enough to be joined by Tantek Celik. The official hashtag for this is hash SXSW a social web. I guess social web was taken earlier, so we get the like unsocial web. The unofficial hashtag that a lot of people use for decentralized social web stuff is hash FSW for federated social web. So if you're talking about it, make sure to go ahead and share out those FSWs too. If you want to, and this is a really great talk, you can also, you know, give me a hallelujah. Evan is so damn right. These are all okay hashtags to use, right? Some other things that you may want to use while we're here, there's a hackpad that's provided by hackpad.com. They've got these really weird URLs, so I registered socialhackpad.com, so you can just go to socialhackpad.com and that should bounce you right to the right place. There's also an IM system at bonfire.im for this specific talk, so that is also a nice back channel. The meta on this talk, this was originally a panel with kind of a broad spectrum of speakers. It was, up until about 5 minutes ago, a solo talk. Interesting thing here, I'm kind of representing one extreme of this conversation. Fortunately, I'm on the right extreme, so, you know, lucky for you. Because what if one of those other guys was up here? You'd be getting really bad information. On one side, we had Dave Recordon, who works for Facebook, right? So clearly the bad guy. And then there were a couple of pragmatists in the middle, and then I'm the nutcase guy way over on the other side. So this kind of, you know, pragmatic title that was like a decentralized social web, is now more like decentralized social web, woo! Because that's what's here. But what I'd like to talk about is, you know, what a decentralized social web looks like, what our social architectures look like now, how they work, what a federated architecture could look like, what technologies there are to implement that architecture, why is it not here yet, and how do we get to that? By architecture, I mean the intentional structure of a system, the shapes that change the way that we live, the structures that we build into our systems that let people interact with them. With social networks in particular, that's not only network topology, but also what the software allows us to do. I think that a kind of ancient times architecture for social networks, the 6 degrees of the late 90s, Friendster, et cetera, were systems for capturing the social graph, right? They were declarative systems for saying, these are my friends, these are not my friends. I use this kind of plum pudding diagram, originally created for atoms by J.J. Thompson, but I like using them for social networks. So, like, there's people, they're connected, they're in a social networky thing. You're going to see a lot of these, so get used to it. You know, the main purpose of those, like, early social network systems where you'd create a profile, make a list of your friends, find out who their friends were, and then try and hook up with those friends. That was, you know, the really important part of that. The interesting thing about that kind of system is that the more complete the data is in that system, the less engaging it is, the less time you're going to go back and spend, you know, refriending people. Another interesting part about that kind of system is that we were able to develop open standards around that kind of system very early on. The friend of a friend or FOF system, as well as XFN, the XHTML friends networks, are both ways of capturing that social graph system. A second phase of social network development is, I like to call it microcasting. Other people call it social collaboration or social content creation. You see systems like Flickr, Delicious, YouTube. These are ways for us to broadcast out to a very small opt-in audience. So, you know, the way it worked is you would create or notice or copy something, and then you would share it with your friends. You know, so those little lines that before were just declaring a relationship now become conduits for content to go from person to person. This is also about the time that we see the introduction of the activity stream model, which is as things are created, as social events like start following someone, start being friends with someone happen, they go into a list that's shown in reverse chronological order, a lot like blogging software shows. Another, you know, kind of important aspect of this early architecture is that we had one app, one graph. If you're doing photos, that's one social graph. If you're doing videos, that's another social graph. If you're doing links, that's a third social graph. The other kind of interesting thing about this content creation is that it really suffers from a cold start problem. It's not as fun to do if you don't have connections, if you don't have people in your network. So you're not going to go create stuff if you don't have people in your network already. Which kind of brings us into a third and kind of the modern era of social networks, the social platform. And this is what we see from Facebook, Twitter, to some extent the open social model. This is a system in which there's a single network that provides an activity stream, identity, and a social graph. And, you know, the social platform kind of, externalizing the applications that create content. These can be social games, these can be uploading video, audio, that kind of thing. And then those flow through the social network within that social platform. So Facebook being the kind of classic example here. It's a really nice symbiotic relationship between the platform clients and the platform provider. The platform clients don't have as much of a cold start problem. The platform provider doesn't hit that saturation level. And, you know, for users, it tends to be an easier system, too. And it especially becomes more valuable for those users. There's a law in communications known as Metcalfe's law, where the value of a network is proportional to the square of the number of users. So having membership in a lot of little networks is nowhere near as valuable as having a membership in one big network. So one big network can be really valuable for users. Which brings us to kind of a predicted phase of where social networks are, or where social network architectures are going, which is, I call it the imperial network. This is the idea on the level of a Twitter or a Facebook. To some extent, LinkedIn has achieved this, where the social network or social platform provider claims the social graph, right? So Mark Zuckerberg saying, we want to provide the social layer to the internet. The platform provider is then able to charge third-party developers for access, sell social data because they're accumulating a lot of social data, live on advertisement. This is kind of the mythology that we have today in our industry, right? The idea that Facebook has won and that, you know, the empire is complete, that there is no graph except the Facebook graph, that your only chance of success in social networking software is by getting entirely onto the Facebook platform. Other networks are kind of these laughable anachronisms, right? When you hear about a MySpace or a Bebo or whatever in the tech press, it's about how they're laughably failing, right? Oh. Interesting. So, I mean, there's some good things to this imperial system, right? It's Metcalfe's law on PCP, right? It's just this amazingly powerful network effect. For people who are looking for an easy way to get into social networking systems, it's one-stop shopping, right? For tech bloggers, it's an easy place for them to look. For marketers, it's an easy place for them to look, right? The big problems is that there's some real questions societally about how this, you know, how this affects us. There are also some questions about technology. You know, it's very hard for a very large network to be innovative. It's hard for them to come up with innovative new interactions. There's only one way to talk to each other. We get kind of fossilized in the way that, that we develop our social network technology. There are some questions about your civic ability. Can you participate in government? If your government is making its outreach through Facebook and you got kicked off Facebook, can you talk to your representative? There's also kind of this single point of failure problem that you know, technologically, when Twitter goes down, you know, everybody cries. And economically, we're all really invested in hoping that Twitter's like business works out well because we want to continue to use that system. It's also, when you have a monopoly system, prices tend to go very, very high, right? There's no competition. So for someone who's a platform client, they don't really get a lot of choice, and thus they tend to pay very high rates to get onto the platform. It's possibly, you know, one of the most ambitious efforts that's happened over the last 10 years is this idea that one company or a few companies could have this monopoly on a mode of human interaction, right? I mean, it's a very unusual thing. Even when we've had like regulated monopolies in a localized place for other kinds of communication, like the telephone, it's not a global monopoly, right? This never really happened before that we've handed over as a society a single mode of human interaction to a single company. And there's not really a lot of motivation for the rest of us to do it. We're still living in a period in which the idea that that is where social networks are, and that is where social network technology lives. In reality, that, you know, everyone pushes their content into the Facebook graph, or everyone pushes their content into the Twitter graph, hasn't really been the way that third parties use these systems, right? They mostly use Facebook, Twitter, as a way to onboard new users and then bring them into their local social graph. So, for these particular systems, they have a lot of incentive to use as many networks as possible. So they're using Google+, they're using Facebook, they're using Twitter in order to bring in as many contacts externally and then set up their own social graph, right? They use those social platforms for activity publishing in order to get a viral loop of adoption, but they're not depending on it as their sole mode of activity streams. Only a few months ago, actually still today, we'll have people declare that there's only one social graph, that it's everything else is dead, and yet we're having new social graphs explode all the time. You know, the darlings of the tech world are pulling in data from Facebook and Twitter, but they're building their own social graphs at the same time, with only a few exceptions. Another thing that's happened over the last year is there's a new pretender to the, you know, global empire throne in Google+, and we've seen some of the players who have been very dependent on this social platform play start to look at other opportunities, right? The idea that there's going to be a single imperium seems to be falling apart. You may not get that from a TechCrunch or a Mashable, but kind of some objective view there. Another thing that's really happened is that we're getting into the, you know, second decade of social network applications, and the idioms of experience have become very, you know, very familiar, so that they're not difficult to replicate entirely. You're not starting from a cold start, like I mentioned before. The idea of an activity stream, social graph, unidirectional and bidirectional follow and friending, membership in a group, maintaining a list of friends or circles, and even the kind of response vocabulary that we have, where you like or plus one something, where you retweet and share, comment or reply. These idioms are becoming very common, which means that they're also becoming commodified. Part of this equation is that these sites that were once, you know, derided are accumulating new users, are building up new engagement. The idea that this, you know, single imperium is continuing seems less and less likely. Open source social web applications are continue to grow. Enterprise social software is also continuing to grow. This is where companies set up a closed social network only for their employees. Typically, they integrate with other enterprise software. It's really unlikely that these networks are going to disappear in favor of a one ring to rule them all social network, right? That people aren't going to put their business data entirely into one big network. Enterprise social software here, I'm talking about Yammer, Jive, Chatter, Socialcast, right? It's a very much more heterogeneous environment than what we see in consumer. Lastly, and probably the most interesting, is China. China continues to develop homegrown social messaging and social networking platforms, and those networks are primarily available only within the Great Wall, Great Firewall, and there are other kind of messed up countries that are looking to do the same thing. Sorry, I I think that's kind of messed up. One final part of the equation is that we're in a time of kind of unprecedented entrepreneurship. We're being asked to do daring things as entrepreneurs. I think that there are, you know, bold entrepreneurs who are not taking the idea that a imperial Facebook is the end of the social network as gospel. So, you know, as easy as it is to think, like, you know, the game is over, I think the game's far from over. There are, whether, you know, Robert Scoble likes it or not, there are multiple social graphs. And this imperial model doesn't seem to be the be-all and end-all of the social web. Where I finally get to the subject of this talk is talking about the federated network. And by a federated network, there's other terminology that people use, an open social web, decentralized social web, as was used in the title of this panel, distributed social web. I like federated because it really focuses on the social topology of the network, that it's about different realms of authority, that it's different organizations that have clear boundaries between them. So it really gets across the point there. But, you know, understanding or getting the idea is much better to me than right terminology, so I'm not going to get hung up on it. The model of a federated social network is this. It's a network of networks, or an intranetwork. You know, heard that one before, right? That there are large and small social networks that participate in this intranetwork. They're internally opaque. If you are not part of that network, you don't get to see what goes on inside, and you don't get to see how the implementation works. Typically, they're going to be server-to-server communication and a client-server model. And connectivity is about user-to-user connections rather than a network-to-network connection. So more like email, less like Usenet, if that makes any sense. And that really the way that they work is a well-defined interoperability system. This great diagram, which I swear is the most complex diagram I've done. I haven't gotten any worse than this. The idea of a federated social network is that those isolated networks are now bridged across. Some networks are large, some networks are small. Different kind of content flows across these barriers, and that both individuals, what would normally be kind of a laughable idea of a network of one, becomes something that can participate in this larger network. There are similar networks, similar topologies. This is how email works. This is how postal mail works, that we have a single addressing system and you can send postal mail anywhere in the world, going across boundaries of international boundaries and different postal systems. Telephones work this way. I have a phone on a Canadian carrier. You have a phone on an American carrier. We can talk to each other because there are well-defined interactions between those organizations. And, of course, this is the way the web works. This is how we've lived for the last 20 years with the web. And so it seems like a very natural system for the way our social web could work, too. It's a robust, participative system. It emphasizes innovation. It favors experimentation. It allows a global reach. And I think most of all is that it really makes more winners, right? There's a lot of opportunity for people to make money, get famous, and enjoy themselves in a way that's not quite as available in that single social graph for the entire internet. There are bad sides too. Much like the internet when it was first starting, the protocols are tricky. They're messy and complicated. And worst of all, it's in its infancy. It can be kind of hard to see the value. But saying that there might be another architecture besides what's kind of being told to us in the tech press can make you sound kind of crazy, and I'm okay with that. It's also a kind of a tough model to execute in the current environment. We've come to think of the only way for businesses to work is in that kind of big hit system where you get everybody onto your network. So it's not quite as scalable in that kind of explosive way that you see in a Facebook or a Twitter. But, you know, it's probably a very good way for more sustainable businesses. Some of the features of how a federated social network works, you have to define a way to identify or locate someone within the network, ways of exchanging profiles data, of defining relationships, of exchanging media, as well as activity streams, that you should be able to exchange messages, define groups, allow for search, allow the same kind of client API standardization that we see from the big networks, as well as, especially in this kind of federated system, data portability becomes much more important because there is another network that you can move your data to. The technologies that are currently in use for federated social web stuff, OStatus is probably the best-known stack right now for federated social web stuff, and ostatus.org is where you can find out more about it. It's made up of a number of different systems, and the nice thing about OStatus is that you can implement different parts of the system and still be part of this federated social network. You don't have to do it all at once. For identity, there's a system called Webfinger. For messages or for data interchange, there's a great system called Activity Streams. For real-time communication, PubSub Hubbub has become a very popular standard. And for responses, much less, the Salmon protocol is the kind of fourth part of this OStatus stack. There are other technologies right now that are kind of being mooted for use for federated social web technology. Diaspora is probably the best known one, where there's a single implementation of the system that is the Diaspora code base. Appleseed and DFRN are a couple of other nice ones. I'm not as excited about any of those, but I do want to bring them up. I think for those of you who've heard this story, who've been told, you know, there's a possibility of federating a social web. A lot of people, you know, when I said I was going to be doing this panel, asked, you know, well, the biggest question I have is why aren't we there yet? You know, StatusNet, the software that I work on, is started in 2008, so almost 4 years. One Social Web was a system launched by Vodafone in 2010. OStatus, the system I was just describing, in 2010. Diaspora also launched in 2010. So, you know, it's been almost 18 months, three and a half years for some of these systems. I think that mainstream adoption of these kind of systems takes a lot of time. You know, if you look at personal computers, it took almost 28 years for them to actually hit, you know, the living room. The internet took a long time to get to people. Blogging took a long time to go from being something that was done by digital elite to, you know, everyday people. So I'm giving myself till 2018 before I start despairing about the state of the federated social web. I think it's not over yet. Another thing that's been an issue for federated social web is that because there's not currently an incumbent in the space, each new participant tends to see a need to reinvent everything, right? So Diaspora would be a really good example there. Coming in with a brand new system, it's not a bad problem. But what happens is that we'll tend to have a lot of small, partially implemented systems instead of one big network. We tend to over concentrate on the basics in federated social web stuff, and we tend to go way down into rat holes of, you know, what the most paranoid people want around P2P, crypto, you know, super privacy, you know, very, very interesting, mathematically interesting problems, less of real problems for real people. Some of the stacks, and including the OStatus stacks, OStatus stack, are incomplete in terms of what you need to have a full social network. They're the first step, but they're not all the way there. They have varying levels of support within the software world. So I think most of all is that the people who've been working on federated social web stuff for the last few years have been really concentrating on getting the protocols right without getting the user interface right. And I think that's something that's changing very rapidly, but it's something that can be frustrating for normal quote-unquote users when they first start approaching FSW technologies. So that's kind of my rough idea of where we are today, right? We've got a concept of an imperial incumbent. We have a number of federated social web efforts that are going on. We have some coalescing around the OStatus stack, but it's not clear how we get to a world where there is a federated social web. I think that the big thing about this is that, especially in the press, it tends to be framed in terms of, like, you know, smash Facebook, like, destroy Twitter. And I think that that kind of frame for doing the work that we do is wrong. It's not about taking big networks and, like, destroying them. It's about taking small networks and joining them. It's a creative process rather than a destructive process. My theory on this about internetworks is that no network joins an internetwork that's smaller than itself, right? So, you know, initially what you see in an internetwork is a networking of very small, even individual systems. Gradually they'll build up, and as they build up, they'll have larger and larger participants, and those larger and larger participants will make the internet work larger and larger too, until you start to see much larger networks. But we're not at this part yet. We're at the, you know, individual by individual level, right? But that's where we have to be thinking right now. We can't be fighting the idea of, like, if we can only convince Google to start supporting some of these protocols, or if we can finally, like, get MySpace on, or what do we do to get Facebook or Twitter to go in? It's got to be doing it one by one. Thinking about that federated future is great, but we get there by inches, not by taking big steps. And so I think that there are a couple of, like, really important first steps to getting there. I think the first and probably most interesting one for me is the IndieWeb concept or IndieWeb movement. This is an idea that's based on the kind of radical concept that everyone deserves to have their own website, right? I think that was taken as a given as little as a few years ago, and now seems like the place of only a few, you know, diehards. But it's a I think it's a pretty essential idea about how the internet works, that each and every one of us has a right to have our own website. For your social interactions, you have a way to publish to one place that website, or, you know, multiple places, and then you syndicate that content out to big networks through those networks, so APIs. At the same time, you syndicate to peers through an open standard. IndieWeb. Did I get this all right? IndieWeb.com? That'll work?
IndieWeb Camp.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
someone's squatting that.
All right. I'll fix that later. So, you know, here's kind of the topology of the IndieWeb is that I am a network of one kind of off on my own website, and that I use a tunneling through the API of this big network to push my content or pull responses out from this network. As multiple participants kind of go along this model, we kind of build up a mirror network outside the big network, and we can use open protocols between these networks. Now, why would you do this? Why is this valuable to these, you know, smaller sites? Well, first of all, they tend to be, you know, people who are excited about creating their own website, so it's kind of fun to do anyways. But also, you get kind of a higher fidelity for the kind of work that you provide if you're, you know, defining the data structures yourself and sharing them out. I think that a lot of us who've used something like the Twitter API get a little frustrated by trying to squish stuff down into a small size, into a plain text format. Being able to do something that's a little more, a little bigger, a little more, a little richer in terms of content can be really satisfying. So having a interaction that and that's through open protocols rather than through the API of the central network can really make this indie web stuff kind of more fun. I think another aspect that's going to be driving adoption of various social web technologies is enterprise bridges. So I talked a little bit about enterprise social networks and this kind of idea that each of them has a social network. You know, you probably have a Yammer or a Jive or a Socialcast or Salesforce Chatter site for your company. You may use StatusNet, I hope. These are kind of isolated systems. Well, very few of us do all of our work just with people inside our organization. We need to have connections to people outside our organization, too. And context switching between social network to email or using a public social network can be really kind of difficult. I think that most likely what we're going to see is use of either a proprietary bridges between networks that are provided by the same software vendor, or open bridging protocols when there is kind of vendor heterogeneity. For vendors that have already adopted some of the technologies that I've been talking about, activity streams, and the kind of OSTATUS stack, this is going to be a very natural topology for us. So we're going to see large networks starting to appear on the open social web, maybe in a protected way at first, but gradually more and more open as enterprises start using this technology for bridging between networks. I think that another part that is really going to be growing in the next year or two is going to be an ecosystem around the federated social web. So up until this point, a lot of the concentration has been on writing network software, writing social network software, less on the kind of support ecosystem that we've seen for other large networks. So I anticipate that we're going to start seeing more along the line of people search, who can I follow on OSTATUS, fire hoses of data, especially for people who are doing brand monitoring or that other kinds of data filtering. Those fire hoses can be really exciting. Very hard to do if you're picking lots of little individual sites. Much easier when you've got some aggregation behind it. Content search, being able to search across the federated social web in an easy way rather than searching each small site. Widgets, having widgets that you can add to, say, a blog post in, right alongside your tweet this or Facebook like, you could put a widget that's using open protocols instead. Another thing that's been a big problem for a lot of people on the federated social web has been spam. Open systems tend to invite open participation from bad people, and so spam filters are something that tend to become that are coming up right now with people who are working on various social web systems. I think that there are some natural allies around federation. These tend to be people who aren't participating in the bigger social network ecosystem right now. A good way to find someone who might be a participant in this is people who have control over, an email domain. So anyone from mobile carriers, big organizations like governments, universities, these are people who have people already. They're not startup companies that are building networks. A university has tens of thousands of people to begin with, right? And they're looking for ways to connect those people. So they're less interested in acquiring new users than in finding ways for those existing users to communicate with the outside. Some of these people who haven't been really participating well or found a place for themselves in the current social network environment may be able to participate a little bit better in a federated environment. If you're interested in federated social network technologies, in the topology, in the value, what can you do? What can you be doing today to be part of this? Just as a regular human being, just as a person who participates on the web, try to use systems that produce push-enabled activity streams. I know that's like a lot of a large jargon really quickly, but it's not that hard once you know the names, right? So if you use Tumblr, if you use Postgres, if you're using Blogger or WordPress on WordPress.com, you can be pushing out your personal content into a pub-sub-hub enabled real-time web. So this lets people on other networks follow you, lets people on other networks consume the data you're doing. You can syndicate that out into the big social networks relatively easily, and all of them have tools to do that. But if you start using those kind of external tools as the way to generate your social content, you're going to be lending your personal prestige, so to speak, to the federated social web. There are open source tools that you can install on your own system, or there are, like I said, there are some services that you can use too, and pretty high-profile services. These aren't fly-by-night things. If you are a developer and you've considered looking into some of the federated social web technologies, probably the easiest way to get started is start generating activity streams from your social social stuff. If you're already doing RSS feeds or Atom feeds, it's really, really easy to get this PubSub/Hub enabled stuff working. It's a couple of lines of code in your XML. You can also be doing it in your JSON feeds. So it's a very simple way to get started syndicating out into that kind of federated real time world. If you're an advocate and you've been, thinking about this kind of stuff, and you signed up for Diaspora, and and none of your friends were on it, and or if you've been using StatusNet and sometimes Identica is down, or if you've been having problems with, getting some of these systems work, I really want to encourage people who've been thinking about this. We're making progress. We're getting closer. We've got a certain level of high profile, and it's not time to give up or give in. We're a lot closer than a lot of us think. It only really ends once. It's not over yet, and everything that happens before that is just progress. So for more info, or if you're interested in some of these technologies, a lot of these kind of loose standards are being adopted into the W3C right now as part of its community development group. So the W3C has been very enthusiastic about the development of federated social web technologies. There's kind of an umbrella group at the FedSoc Web community group. There's also one that's concentrating specifically on OStatus. If you have questions, you can always reach me on the internet at evan@status.net. That's my WebFinger address. You can also just go straight to my URL, evan.status.net. Cool. And scene. Awesome. I guess we start with questions. Or do you want to start with a conversation, the two of us, and go to questions
then? Well, you had some rhetorical questions in your presentation, so maybe we can start with those.
Okay.
And I think probably the most important one that you asked was, you showed all the stuff that was started or being worked on in 2010, and you asked, well, it's 2012 now, what's taking so long?
Yeah.
Right? Like, what's the problem? And I think that there's been a few key problems, and so as anyone who's like working on this stuff passionately, we should admit to them and confront them and figure out how to work through them. So I think first of all that there's been a lot of promises, and that's been a huge challenge. So it's been if you look at like all the stuff that's been promised about OpenID, or all the stuff that's been promised about federated social web, or even the Diaspora guys, like, bless them, they're like four amazingly optimistic, positive, like super intelligent, like, college students came out and like built this amazing thing and got this amazing funding. And then the press, of course, hyped all of this stuff into all the classic David versus Goliath type narratives. And it got to such a point that it was like there was no way anybody could deliver on the promises.
Right.
And so
right.
there's a little bit of that sort of like, trough of disillusionment problem that I think we have been going through. Despite that, there's been good progress made. The other big problem that I don't think any of us has mentioned is that a lot of the folks that have been working on all these federated social web solutions got hired by the big guys. I mean, to be totally blunt, like almost everyone I know working on decentralized social web type stuff has been hired by Google or Twitter or Facebook or anybody else.
Google, Twitter, Facebook, Microsoft, eBay.
Okay, so when your day job changes and focuses you on other things, perhaps, or perhaps someone else is, you know, paying your bills, and all of a sudden you might not have as much time to work on these things. And so I think literally we've been drained of attention. You know, I don't think there was any sort of like conspiracy at work. That's probably taking it a bit too far.
Yeah.
But there was certainly, like, that has definitely hurt the progress, for sure.
Right.
But that was yesterday. Let's talk about today. How are we moving forward as fast as we can? What are we doing?
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the things that's probably excited me most in the two of the things that have excited me most are kind of on opposite sides of the spectrum. One has been the really great adoption at institutional levels of parts of this stack, right? So the recognition by the W3C that this is an important problem and starting to adopt these kind of community efforts, you know, kind of slurp them into the W3C, I think has been helpful. And I think that's great. On the kind of opposite end of the spectrum in terms of conservative versus or institutional versus individual, I think has been the, you know, growth of indie web effort, right? The idea that it's really kind of fun to be building your own stuff, and that you have it's okay for you to be building your own kind of broadcast system into these larger networks. And I think that we've been largely framing the discussion as either it's all federated or it's all this kind of big monolithic networks. And I think the indie web kind of third way has been really kind of exciting.
I'm glad to hear you say that. I mean, earlier you said it's sort of like a radical notion that potentially, you know, everyone has their own website. But what I think is really going on is we are in the 1970s of the social web. Okay. In the 1970s, the vision was put forth that every single person would have their own personal computer. And people were like, well, that's kind of crazy. Why would you everyone need their own personal computer, right? Now the question isn't how many, you know, who has a personal computer, but now how many? How many of out there have at least one personal computer, right? Okay, we have multiple, right? If you were to propose that in the 1970s, you would have been laughed at. Okay, similarly with cell phones. How many people actually, like, why would you need your own phone? You know, why not just use the one at home or the one at work? But now every single person here has their own cell phone. So I think that's where we are, where until we build an easy and accessible solution that people just start picking up and using, and everyone starts to get their own, it's not going to be obvious that, yes, duh, of course everyone has their own independent website. What were we thinking before? But I think we'll get there.
Yeah. I think it's a, you know, I think that there is a lot of exciting innovation that happens when that's the frame that you set up, right? When people are really taking the time to be hacking on their social web world, there's lots of new things that people do. You know, people build bots, people build new kinds of data structures and data types that go out over these networks, and it's pretty fun stuff to see it happen. Yeah. Where do you see? I guess I'll bounce this back to you. Where do you see the indie web camp effort kind of going?
So we start Indie Web Camp with one really serious focus, which is get yourself on the Indie Web, or if you are already on the Indie Web, make your stuff work better with other networks, with other Indie Web folks, whatever it takes, all of us that wanted to do that. And that's a lot of ways how the personal computer evolved, is that everyone that wanted to build a personal computer got together and they formed, you know, the Homebrew Computer Club, and that's all history you can read about the 1970s about computers. We're essentially replicating that effort for the indie web. So I would say, you know, anyone out there like that wants a personal domain, go out and buy one. Even if all you do is like map it to a Tumblr, you've started what we call homesteading on the web. And I think that as soon as you start doing that, you start to feel differently about the web, about how you treat the web and how you treat publishing to all these other what we call social silos that take over your content. Mm. So why don't we start taking some questions, folks? Can we get the house lights up? And then we've got some volunteers at the microphones. So we've got a couple of hands up over here on the right.
Great. You got the mic there?
Yeah, if we could get the house lights up just a little bit.
Control. Hi. Evan, you gave some advice on what humans can do to help and what developers can do to help. As a consultant who helps enterprises understand how they should deal with some of these kind of things, you know, have coming people coming to me asking me, should I set up Socialcast or Yammer or these kind of things? What can I do to help? What should I be suggesting to those enterprises?
Right. So these are. Let me see if I can reiterate the question. For someone who's a consultant who's used to who's reaching out to these companies, what can you be telling them when they're saying, "What do we choose? Yammer, Socialcast, StatusNet, etc." Right. I think that for certain kinds of organizations, especially smaller organizations, they're going to see the advantage of a federated structure very quickly. I think also for organizations that are very big and have a big supply chain, right? So they see a network of suppliers and vendors that are providing them service. They want to stay connected to those organizations. I think that there's a great selling point, and something that, you know, when I'm talking to StatusNet customers, is one of the things that we talk about, is that there is this ability to kind of reach out to other organizations and form these network ties. So, you know, that's really great. The other thing is that, you know, some of these other enterprise social networks are supporting parts of or all of these technologies. Actually, very few of them are supporting all the technologies, but at least a few are already supporting activity streams as a feed format, so as a way to get things out, and a few of them are supporting PubSub Hubub as a way to syndicate out through the enterprise. It's a great way. So, you know, another thing is just say, you know, request that they have activity streams enabled or activity streams enabled feeds. Request PubSub Hubub as a way for syndicating out, and that's a really great way to get started and kind of, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff. We had a question over here. Hi, Mike.
My question is, do you think, Evan, do you think that security is stopping the federated social web?
Security. Can you rephrase that in terms of a use case?
Well, the internet enables you to connect to publish data, no security. Mm-hmm. And, or you can password protect data and, you know, to either totally block it or totally allow it. And it seemed like social networking allowed us to do something in between where I could publish my data, but just to my friends. So I'm wondering, is it really just security, the thing that's, the web is already a big federation. Mm-hmm. Is it just the fact that we can't federate securely that's the problem?
I think that's like the privacy question, right? Like, I want to share stuff, but not with the planet. I just want to share stuff with a few friends or maybe my coworkers. Is that a fair recasting of your question? Okay. And one of the things that, you know, I really should give a shout out to the Diaspora guys for this is that they have been championing that since day one. Yeah. And I'm really, really proud of the work that they've accomplished and what they've actually gotten built and shipped with that, right? You can go install Diaspora on your own server now and provide limited access to different sets of people, to different posts that you make. They have it running. It's working. I'll let Evan answer about StatusNet and what you can do with that.
Yeah, I will. Dang it. On the level of O status, and especially the stack that I was talking about PubSub Hubub and activity streams, PubSub Hubub was originally designed as a real-time delivery system for blog posts. So designed at Google, so it's, you know, why it's in use at Blogger and Tumblr and so on. Privacy or delivery of private data was not, you know, the most important part of that system. So people have been working around with PubSub Hubub to do private delivery, but it's not part of the core protocol right now, and that has been an issue for us, right? There are a couple of questions around security, right? What the level of security you need, but also what kind of security profile you need. You know, some systems allow me to share certain things with friends of friends, but not with friends of friends of friends or with a particular group. Once you start distributing a network, having those particular rules can be a little bit difficult to get across. But I think the big thing that I want to say is that PubSub Hubub, which is the real-time delivery system, is currently going through a revision to make that, build that security in and make it much more transparent to developers and users. So I think that's going to be a really big good step.
I was just curious. It seems like this is a David and Goliath setup situation where we basically said we don't want to tackle the big guys. We don't want to convince the Facebook and the Google to open themselves up. They have no financial incentive to do so. So we'll just go over here and create our own thing, and hopefully it'll eventually succeed. So part one of my question is, can that actually succeed? If we don't eventually convince those guys to participate? And secondly, and I think more importantly, you said that we are basically trying to replicate what happened with the personal computer. The difference between those two metaphors, the difference between what happened back then and what's happening now, is there's already a huge established user mindset around the big guys right now, and there maybe wasn't that back then with the personal computer.
There was.
So can users ever be convinced that getting off of Google and getting off of Facebook, getting onto IndieWeb or something like that will actually be useful?
So. Yeah, there was established mindset back then. I mean, I was actually alive in the 70s, so I can speak to this. Barely. People use their computers, their shared computers at work. There were these things called dumb terminals. I don't know if VT100 rings a bell to anyone. The systems where it was assumed you had terminals, you know, of course, computers were controlled by the companies, large companies installed. So that was the assumption. Why would I need a personal computer? I mean, then I'd have to deal with the software and the backups and all that. I mean, we do anyway. But it's gone that way. There was definitely the notion that, like, there's these big centralized computers, and of course all your, you know, systems are on there and they're secure, and there's a staff, you have IT staff that take care of them. So much more convenient, right? So it was a huge uphill battle, and frankly, I think that any time we spend trying to convince the big players to, like, play friendly is almost wasted. Not completely, but almost wasted. They're going to, the big players will act when it's in their incentive to do so. And that's what we as the indie web and the folks that are pushing for the federated social web, decentralized, all that, we need to do. Once we get critical mass, they'll start coming over one by one. And that's the key.
I think that, you know, it is a good question, right? And I think the question that you phrased was, you know, can this succeed without convincing the big guys to participate? I would probably, you know, counter that with, you know, if we redefine success, we can make it succeed, you know, however we want, right? I think that if we can find a way to get network A and network B connecting each other, that is a success. And that if that happens, you know, we've provided the right technology. Now, that is not the same kind of topological change to the social network system that, you know, I was kind of describing. But I think that the, you know, there are lots of social networks. I mentioned the enterprise social networks, right? There are hundreds of thousands of networks on Yammer. There are hundreds of thousands of networks on Salesforce Chatter. We have tens of thousands on status.net. These enterprise social networks are out there. They're big. There are, you know, dozens and dozens of social networks in the consumer space that are separate from the social graph that's happening with Facebook, right? So the fact is there are lots of social networks, and that our success comes from letting those social networks connect rather than breaking the big ones up. Now, I will consider it a big success when we do, you know, flip some of these big networks, but I think by that time we won't consider it that big a deal, right? It'll seem something very, very natural. I would probably compare, say, when AOL started letting AOL users get on the web or send internet email. By the time that happened, it wasn't that big a deal because the internet was significantly bigger than the AOL user base by that time, you know, whereas earlier on it hadn't been. Great. Can we get a microphone over here? We'll go one and two. And we're at, let's see, 1325 I've got. So we've got about...
Actually, this sort of follows from what you just said, because I worked for AOL from 93 to 96. And we actually started letting our members like use email and the web before the web was that big. But as soon as we saw Mosaic in 93, we knew things were going to change.
Yeah.
At least some people got it right away. But... it's
That's
sort of
awesome,
interesting.
I use that example all the time. I've never had anyone who was actually like inside.
When they started using web technology for their content and they started to sort of open up the walled garden was when it really became obvious, and that was a few years later. But the real thing is when you were talking about the incumbents, some of the arguments about like venture capitalists losing their shirts or they'll never... accept it. Well, everyone thought AOL was ruled the world at that time, and you know, this web thing, you know, it's kind of geeky, it's not really going to change anything, but eventually it definitely did. And I think their sort of dial-up service business model is what really did them in first, but they had a much more complicated content model to deal with too, and they've been struggling with it, but they don't own everything anymore.
Yeah, I know. Well, definitely the case. And I think it's, you know, I think like you were saying about the business opportunities. You know, business opportunities here are pretty pretty wide. I think right now they're along the lines of providing social network services, you know, providing software as a service, or even, you know, to the level of selling software, consulting. This is less of the, you know, big win kind of thing that we talk about in the tech press today. You know, it's more of the Yammer, less of the Facebook, right? And I think it's a great business. It's just not the kind of business that we get a lot of attention to. So next question.
Yeah, sure. And I'm actually not a developer, so I apologize if this question is naive. I'm more of a customer experience designer. So, you know, to what extent do you think sort of the ability to track and sort of manage responses to your content after you've syndicated it out across the web is a challenge? Because I, you know, I come at this from a different angle, which is not, you know, what's the technical barrier, but what is the user motivational barrier to mass adoption? So I recently created a piece of content and put it out on the web. I syndicated it out as much as I could across social platforms. It got very nicely picked up. I don't really know how many page views it got. I think a couple of 100,000, not sure. But it's very, very difficult and challenging to track all the responses. You know, I just find these random websites where someone's kind of picked it up. There's a bunch of comments. It's just kind of serendipity. I have no idea how many people saw it. I have no idea who those people are. And as a user, you know, having an open system that can really allow me to sort of have the pinging back and forth after the syndication is I think that's a big idea that could really get the public excited about this, and then you reach that kind of motivational tipping point.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. Right now, we tend to focus on what we can measure. So we say, like, you know, this got so many retweets or so many faves on Facebook, without, you know, really looking at the rest of the world and that very long tail of response and engagement that happens with content. So I think having more systems that allow people to measure and get back those responses, the better that we're going to be. Do we have one in the back there? And then I think that's going to have to be the last question, so make it a good one.
Okay. I actually apologize because I came in a little bit late, so if you guys touched on this in the beginning, I might not have seen it. But my question revolved around, you mentioned business models around trying to get this stuff out, and a lot of the people actually had to take on day jobs to be able to support themselves, which we all do have to do. So what, I guess, what projects are currently out there that might, I guess, service this need? So, like, are there any decentralized ad-based networks that can be plugged in that allow, like, users to make their own money off of their own stuff, other than, you know, traditional ones, but maybe ones that can be integrated in a more social way? So it's like I can get paid for promoting, you know, CBS's new talk show or whatever. What kind of work is being done in that space now, especially, you know, with Dyspora and things like that, and integrating those in with current existing technology?
You know, that is a great question, because it's one of the things that made, you know, blogging very sustainable was the ability to kind of survive on ads. When you're syndicating out over lots of different systems, it can be harder to do. I think that, you know, today when you're talking about it, what you're looking at is kind of a traditional content publication ad model. We're seeing a lot of people who do, like, you know, AdSense on their social website. We have systems to do this. People do it in different places, but you're getting ad revenue when people land on your page, which the whole point is they don't have to go to your page. It comes to your inbox. There has been some movement for advertising on, you know, distributed web, but the shutting down of social advertising startups after Twitter kind of shut them down off the Twitter network has made it kind of tough. So I think there's a real opportunity there for someone to get into, because I think it's a great one. So it's a great place to start a business right now.
I've got one thing to add to that, actually, which is you publish a new website today with any of these software solutions or even your own and use PubSub, Hubbub. Your results, that your text that you tweet about or blog about from your own domain are going to show up first in Google almost instantly. Yeah. This is something that not a lot of people know, but Google has integrated real-time PubSub Hubbub indexing into primary search. So if you post to your own site and then copy it to Twitter or Facebook or whatever, the first result is not going to be Twitter or Facebook. It's going to be your site. So there's already huge incentive for anyone that wants to send traffic to their site. Yeah. Whatever you're blogging about, you need to immediately flip to the open web. I mean, to the indie web. I mean, open indie web.
Indie open web.
You don't need to wait for any solutions to ship, right? Like, you can do it right now today. I'm going to tweet a link to how to get started on that.
So I want to say,
Are we over?
We're a little bit over. Do we have one more question, or? Do we have any other questions? Go ahead and let's do your follow-up real quick. Right. So that's not the only source of your traffic, right? So, but it's if you are syndicating out to those other networks, you're still going to be driving that traffic back. You'll also be getting a better ranking. So it's just an incremental level. And so on that kind of interesting fine point.
Syndicate your copies out. I mean, that's the thing, right? You want that traffic from those networks. So yes, syndicate your copies out, but put the primary copy on your own network and always link back to, I mean, on your own site. Always link back to your own site from those other silos.
Well, so I want to say thanks to everybody. If you have any other questions, please feel free to come up to the podium after. And I especially, you know, one last thing that I want to note is that someone who's worked really hard in the diaspora project in the last year passed away in fall of 2011. For those of us who work on Federated Social Web efforts, it was a pretty big tragedy. You know, I just want to say thanks to him for having done his work. So, you know, Ilya, RIP. Thanks a lot, everyone. Bye-bye.